Veterans Affairs managed to double its rate of processing claims for Gulf War illness, completing more than 11,000 of them in 1 year. But that number doesn't tell the whole story. Some denial letters are poorly written. Claims staff often lack training. And joining me with some more, Melissa Emery-Aris, Director of Education, Workforce, and Income Security Issues at the Government Accountability Office. Ms. Emery-Aris, good to have you on.
Thank you for having me here, Tom.
What triggered this is the fact that Gulf War applications for benefits, Gulf War syndrome, are approved at a much lower rate than average for VA?
That's correct. We looked at a six-year period from fiscal year 2010 through fiscal year 2015, and we found that the approval rate for Gulf War illness is actually three times lower than the approval rate for all other types of medical issues. Specifically, we found that the approval rate is 17% for Gulf War illness medical issues compared to 57% for all other types of medical issues.
Now, a number of years ago, the VA went through an argument over Vietnam-era types of syndromes that were difficult to, I guess, quantify and describe. And they just went ahead and said, okay, we declare this a legitimate syndrome. Has that happened with Gulf War syndrome?
It has. There's a parallel system where they so-called presume that someone has Gulf War illness if they have a certain set of symptoms or conditions. So with Gulf War illness, the symptoms can really vary. So individuals may have symptoms ranging from neurological issues, to joint pain, to sleep disturbances, to skin issues, to chronic fatigue syndrome, to even infectious diseases like malaria and West Nile virus. And if a veteran has served in the Gulf or Southwest Asia and has those symptoms, they can be presumed to have a service-related disability.
And do they have to have a certain combination of these things? Because any one of them can be caused by many, many factors.
Right. So there, I think that's the challenge with Gulf War illness is that there's a lot of uncertainty regarding the causes of a lot of these symptoms. Some of the issues are a little bit more straightforward. It's a little bit easier to diagnose, for example, malaria or West Nile virus. On the other hand, when you have issues such as headaches, fatigue, joint pain, skin issues, it's really difficult to know if that's something that was caused by exposure during service or if that is related to a different medical issue that perhaps might be more connected to just the body aging over time. So I think that's one of the real significant challenges with Gulf War illness is that not a lot is known about the causes. I think part of it is that people who did serve were exposed to a lot of environmental hazards. Some were exposed to pesticides, oil well fires, even depleted uranium. And there's not a lot known about how much they were exposed to. The records that DOD kept were not good in that respect. So there's a lot of uncertainty about what the service members were exposed to during their service. And there's not a lot known in terms of the medical research connecting those potential exposures to the myriad of symptoms that people may be experiencing today.
We're speaking with Melissa Emery-Aris, Director of Education, Workforce, and Income Security Issues at the Government Accountability Office. And one of the things in your report raised a question for me, and that is that often the claims processors rely on reports and examinations by the medical staff. My question is, why is that a problem, and shouldn't every claim be based on a medical evaluation?
Medical evaluations are indeed helpful, and the claims raters do, in fact, often ask for a medical exam to help them determine whether or not a veteran does have Gulf War illness. The challenge we found with those exams, however, is that the examiners are not always trained in how to identify Gulf War illness. And although VA has optional training for these examiners on Gulf War illness, about 90% of the examiners had not taken the training as of this past February. So this is a optional training that was rolled out in 2015, and yet 2 years later, 90% of the examiners still hadn't taken it. And that was very concerning to us because of the challenges that we've been discussing around diagnosing Gulf War illness and understanding the causes of it, and even labeling it as Gulf War illness versus labeling it as something else, we thought it would be very helpful for the examiners to know what they're doing and to take the training. Yet VA made the training optional, not required. And because it was optional, most of the examiners did not take it.
Sounds like there's a big gap in policy and practice caused by something left out of policy, which is everybody adjudicating these cases has to have this training.
Right. So we actually made a recommendation that VA require the medical examiners to take the training on Gulf War illness issues to help them be able to identify it when they're doing medical exams. And this is something that is required for other types of challenging circumstances. For example, the VA already requires examiners to take required training for exams dealing with PTSD or traumatic brain injury. And so we think it's important that they also do so for Gulf War illness because it is so challenging medically.
But what about the training for the people that process the claims, which I guess are not medical people, but what are they, administrative judges?
Well, they have staff who do claims rating and who look at the exam information and make a determination on the claims. And VA is in the process of rolling out more training, and they've also updated guidance for those claims examiners. And we think that that's really important because we saw a lot of variation in the field. Some offices have higher approval rates than others, and we think that guidance and training of claims staff will help ensure better consistency going forward.
When there is differential between or among offices, that's often a telltale sign of differences in procedure rather than differences in what is being brought before them.
That's the concern, and that's why guidance and training can help with that, to help make sure that there is a consistent approach regardless of which office you happen to file a claim in. It's important that you be treated the same.
And other than giving all of the medical staff that particular training, what other main recommendations did you have?
We recommended that they write their decision letters in plain English. We found that the decision letters, especially those that were denying benefits for Gulf War illness, were extremely difficult to understand, and it didn't clearly explain to the veteran how their claim was evaluated and why it was denied, which could leave veterans confused and could ultimately result in them appealing claims unnecessarily. So we recommended that VA simply write the denial letters in clear English and explain to veterans how their claims were reviewed.
And the same staff that are reviewing these claims, are they also reviewing other sets of claims, or is there a dedicated staff to Gulf War illness?
They review a variety of claims, so this is one type of claim that they might review. I'd like to also point out that one of the other recommendations that we made that I think is really critical is that VA work on their research piece with Gulf War illness because of those challenging circumstances that we talked about. We think it's important that there be advancements on the research side to make it easier to diagnose Gulf War illness and to treat it and then to adjudicate it, like you're saying, and provide benefits. And at this point in time, there's not a single definition of Gulf War illness. And while VA has an objective to create one, it has no action plan to actually get there. So we recommended that VA develop a plan to develop a case definition of Gulf War illness that would help it with diagnosis, treatment, and benefits.
Something else to put on their plate, I guess. One more detail about the letters. If this claims staff, the claims processing staff, is writing letters that nobody can understand to Gulf War illness people, are all the letters that are coming out of them to all of the claims equally bad?
That's a good question. I know that there's been legislation focused on improving all claims decision letters in general, not just those for Gulf War illness. And I think, we found here that the letters specifically for Gulf War illness were very difficult to understand. And I have to say that my staff looked at the letters and had to continuously reread them to try to figure them out. And these are people that are studying this issue, and they had trouble understanding the letters themselves. And they don't have neurological issues to, work through as well.
Sure. So it's even worse than if you are the veteran receiving this letter. It may be totally out of your ability to get anything from it.
Correct.
Melissa Emery-Aris is Director of Education, Workforce, and Income Security Issues at the GAO. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll post a link to her report and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.